You're listening to the WP Tonic, WordPress and Tech, focused on building a successful business in WordPress aimed at the WordPress professional and power user. Join Jonathan Denwood and Kurt Von Annen as your host and co-host as we bring you great discussions from around the globe.
Welcome back, folks, to the WP Tonic Show. In this episode, we've got a returning friend from the show, a master of WordPress and podcasting. We've got, like I say, a friend. We've got Matt Medeiros with us. It should be a fascinating show. We're going to be talking about all things AI and WordPress and WooCommerce. I'm sure it's going to be a lively discussion. Matt's been saying some fantastic insights lately around these subjects. So, Matt, would you like to quickly introduce yourself to the tribe?
Sure thing. Matt Medeiros from the WP Minute. You can find me over there. You can find me at my day job at Gravity Forms at gravityforms.com. Excited to dive into talking about WordPress and AI stuff today.
Yeah, it should be a great discussion. And I've also got my ever patient and helpful co-host, Kurt. Kurt, would you like to introduce yourself to the new listeners and viewers?
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. My name is Kurt Von Annen. I own an agency called Mañana No Más. Also work directly with the good folks over at WP Tonic.
Yeah, it's fantastic. But before we go into the meat and potatoes of this great show, I've got a message from one of our major sponsors. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
Hey, running a business is tough. You shouldn't have to worry about your website, too. With Kinsta's managed hosting for WordPress, you get lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7 expert support from real humans. Switch to Kinsta and see site speeds improve by up to 200% with effortless migrations and powerful, easy-to-use dashboard. Join over 120,000 other businesses who also trust Kinsta. Get your first month for free at kinsta.com. That's K-I-N-S-T-A.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
We're coming back, folks. We've also got a sponsor of the month, and Kurt's going to be telling you something about that. Over to you, Kurt.
Well, folks, today's episode is sponsored by Mesterio LMS, and here's why we're excited about them. It's a free version. It's not a trial. It's unlimited courses, unlimited lessons, unlimited students. So you get all that. It's unlimited, and it's free forever. No credit card needed. You can build your entire course business without paying a cent. The drag and drop builder is there. The quiz creation is there. The student progress and tracking and built-in payment processing is all there with PayPal and Stripe. And when you're ready for certificates, content drip, or advanced features, you can always upgrade to the pro version if you like. Most course creators can launch for free. You need to check it out. Mesterio LMS. That's MASTERIYO.com.
That's fantastic, Kurt. So let's go straight into it, Matt. So really, I think what you've been saying lately on your own great podcasts and YouTube channel about your feelings around AI really match my own, because I use a ton of AI myself, Matt. I'm not been in vibe coding like you, but I do use a lot of it. But my feelings about it are, to say they're all over the place would be the understatement. I've kind of verbalized that to Kirk, and Kirk's got similar feelings about it in some ways. So could you encapsulate where you are at the present moment around? Because you've had a little few more days to think about it, haven't you?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is going to be a tough conversation after OpenAI said they're going to get into more like erotica stuff yesterday. So I'm like, oh, man, I'm in for it tomorrow when I talk to Jonathan about this stuff. But the point is like, the point is like, now I just feel like, oh, okay, like, what happened to the real innovative stuff that I really thought we were, you know, going down? And I'm not an AI, you know, scientist. I'm not an engineer. I might not be using this stuff at the same, well, I know I'm not using it at the same pace that a lot of like these, you know, real hardcore AI folks are. I'm using it as a power user, and I'm specifically using it in, you know, the WordPress context of like a WordPress professional, agency owner, work at Gravity Forms. So like, how does AI help with Gravity Forms? And I use it as a content creator. ideating, helping me do all this other stuff, running a business, yada, yada, yada. So I feel like I'm the prosumer for, like, let's just call it OpenAI for now. And I just feel like we're not really seeing those wins. On my podcast, or one of my podcasts last week, there was a blog post that Sam Altman put out about the Sora 2 updates. So like Sora 2 launched, everybody went, oh my God, we can make all this video. And then he put out a blog post saying something like, I'm just paraphrasing here, but I think it's almost word for word, is like, we need to figure out a way to make money with AI, with a video. And it's like, wait a minute, what? You just got like $1 trillion in 7,000 acres of U.S. land for data centers. And now you're coming to us going, you need to make money with video? I thought you already figured that out. You know, so I just start seeing all of these little red flags pop up. And I feel like we're just re-witnessing a more immersive way, the same way like Facebook lured everybody into Facebook and like own their content and own their data. I think that's what's happening now with, again, like OpenAI and many of them, where they're just trying to get us into the platform. And then, aha, here's how we'll make money off of you with your data and all this other stuff. So I'm still optimistic with it as a productivity tool. Mm. I'm less thinking about it as, oh, is this thing going to take my job? Like, I don't see that just yet, because everything I feel like is starting to tighten up a bit. Like the progression of its usability and like what these leaders are saying about AI, it seems like it's starting to slow down. And I'm like, oh, I know what's happening here. Y'all hyped us to get on this train. And now it's like, we're not going to get there yet.
Well, to me, I just want to put the actual, it's all around their hype around general intelligence, isn't it? And trying to get as much money, and I'm talking about OpenAI here, their attempt to establish the data centers, get in with the leading chip manufacturers, get in with Oracle, get in with Microsoft, and put a garden fence around them. So they've got the money, but they've also got so many key players in bed with them that if it goes a bit pear-shaped, they're going to be one of the survivors. This is only my interpretation. That's the impression I'm getting. And then you've got all this hype around general intelligence. I think some of the people in not only OpenAI, but in the AI industry have a little bit of a kind of religious zealot about them. So they actually do believe it. Others, I think it was just a hype to encourage the market to give them all this financial resources. Because I'm no expert on it, but I listen to a lot of media and they're constantly talking about it, and they have leading experts on their show. And a lot of these people that not only kind of external critics, but are leading head of departments, and that are a little bit critical about scaling, about the possibility that that we're going to get increased functionality through scaling. How would you respond to what I've just outlined?
Yeah, I think, you know, you're heading down the right path. Like, I think with all of this AI stuff, there is for years on the internet, we were just like, man, how do you scale this thing? And it was always about improving the processor, the CPU, the memory, the storage in the server, and then replacing those servers like in those data centers. I mean, I'm loosely painting that picture, but that's what we were kind of thinking. Like, we would optimize kind of what we already had. And then this AI thing came out and it was like, no, we need to clear the land and we need to bring in water and electricity from all over all over the nation to run like these data centers. And we got to buy all of these GPUs and we can't sell to these other countries. Like, what the hell just happened between then and now? And the scalings for this stuff is so, it's so just like unproportional compared to like what we were doing in the past that it just doesn't make sense. It's like people say a billion, like you people are just like throwing billions around like it's nothing, like it's ouch change. And I don't think we're all really ready for that kind of, you know, expense as a people and as a nation. You know, it's funny. I use this as an example, as just like my canary in the coal mine is this platform called Replit, right? Did a lot of vibe coding and like building all of these like React based apps. And I don't know, a year ago, I could build something and it was pretty amazing. Like it was like, wow, I built this and it was fast and it was like $20 a month. And I was just like, I could never do this because I don't know React. I don't know how to build these things. And I was like, wow, this Replit thing is really cool. And over the last year, it has got slower and more expensive to build on Replit. And I'm looking at that going, I see what's happening here. They're trying to figure out their, like in the beginning, they just had all the investment in the world and they were just hyping it up. I think the guy was on Joe Rogan's podcast, like hitting all the media and everyone was hopping on. And I was like, ah, yeah, this is that story again. Hype it up, everybody gets on it, and then they accrue as many monthly users as they possibly can, and then they have to figure out how they make money, all the while they're using technology from Claude and OpenAI. So those prices are going up too. And now the consumer is sitting there going, wait, why is my Replit bill now from 20 to 150? What happened? And yeah, I think we're all going to start to realize the cost of AI really soon when it comes to like these products that are built on top of OpenAI and Claude and stuff like that.
Yeah, before I throw it over to Kurt, I think that's really insightful, what you just said. And I've not with some of the AI I've been using, because I bought some lifetime deals and yearly deals and that, but what you've just outlined, I've heard from a lot of people. The other thing is, do you think, obviously, there's a desperate need to monetize this and they're going to attempt to monetize it through advertisement. But the problem with that, and probably I'm only surmising this, I just want to see what you feel about this statement. I think they've been a bit leery about taking advertisement, not because they couldn't even do it now, but there's a contradiction. Because people just seen whatever it's Claude, Gemini, or OpenAI, whatever answers they give you, people just, well, that's got to be true. That must be the right product. You know, I'm just going to go to that website and buy it because this agent tells me that it's the best, right?
Yeah.
But if they're taking advertisement money, do you think people are going to be so naive to think that the top result they recommend to you isn't going to be the result they got the most money through advertising? Yeah. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I'm starting to look at this now and just talking about OpenAI, because I would say that they're a bigger, like if you don't count Google and what they're up to, like OpenAI probably the biggest in the room. And I really think that they're just trying to go after Google, right? Hands down, like trying to go after Google search. Like Google search has owned this space for, well, I don't know, whatever, nearly 30 years or 20 years. And they're going after that huge pie of search. And they've been able to do it because, or they've been able to, what I'll say, maybe mask it. Because everyone feels like this thing is like thinking and talking to you when it's not really that. They're shaping it to be that. So it's that experience. And I think you hit the nail on the head is if all of a sudden you see an ad in this response, you might not even know it. Like it might not even be there in the back of your head. Cause I feel like I'm having a conversation with ChatGPT when I'm using it. And I know it's not really talking to me. But as soon as you start to see an ad or a promoted spot, I think the human brain goes, oh, this is just me searching for something again. This just feels like Google again. And I think they're being very wary about that. And that's why you see stupid blog posts like we need to figure out how to make money. And now we might do like this erotica thing and we need you to age authenticate and essentially get your information just like Facebook did and lock you into that account and really start matching up that memory feature. I know I sound really pessimistic about this stuff, but I really do enjoy the productivity side of what AI gives me. And that's the lane I want it to go down. I haven't been able to really wrap my head around an intelligent approach to this comment I'm about to say, but when I look at technology's advancements in like CPUs and how like CPUs have transitioned over the many decades from like, I don't know, 64 hertz or 166 hertz to where we're at today, which is like 5 gigahertz, and like these little speed increases and memory got better and faster and smaller and storage got better and faster and smaller, motherboards faster, smaller, all this other stuff. I see AI like being a part of that tech stack, and it's just another lane of technology for me. It's not this thing that hopefully that takes over everything. It's like, how fast is your AI processor? Which I know they're already like marketing, but like how fast is your AI processor and what can it do? I don't see it hopefully taking over everything. I just see it as another processing unit in our tech stack, if that makes sense.
Yeah, sure. Over to you, Kurt.
Well, on one hand, I'm overcome by a little bit of pessimism, especially if we isolate it to our WordPress space. But then recently, I was just exposed to a couple of young automation experts, I guess that's what we'll call them. And they were doing some really cool, like amazing tying tools together to make things happen. And things like from the perspective of using AI that I didn't, I guess it was there. I mean, I guess I realized it was there, but like to watch them do it right. And so like leveraging Telegram as the trigger. So they message themselves in Telegram to get it to create content, format content, add graphic elements to the content, and automatically create a blog post on their WordPress page, but in draft status. So they could go sign in as the administrator and either approve or disapprove the draft. And so when I looked at that example, I was like, that's pretty cool. Because the thing where I get lost on the AI, Matt, and maybe you have some better insight on this, is you go to this window, you type in a prompt, you get some things. Sometimes you can copy and paste it and it's great. Other tools, you can copy and paste, it's pre-formatted. Other tools, you know, you got to delete asterisks and bold things and make it an H1 or an H2 as you put it in. With everyone that's combining AI into their WordPress tools and building products, and then talking about like frameworks that I just mentioned, like what do you think the lessons are for not just us, but for people that are developing products in the WordPress space?
That analogy that you brought up actually makes me want to shift my comment to maybe AI is just a better peripheral to computing. Like we have a keyboard and a mouse, but we have to manually type and we have to manually move the mouse and click things. AI is just like taking that and just doing it for us. I see it as like that evolution of automation that just like makes things a little bit more, you know, more powerful. The thing that drives me nuts the most is when I hear other leaders talk about deploying AI in their organization. And I'm talking about like enterprise folks and like bigger businesses and stuff like that. And it's always, the answer is always like, just go play with it. Just go play with it. Like that's our approach. Well, what happens if we don't know like what to do with it? Well, you just ask AI and AI will tell you like what to do with it. And I like from a leadership perspective, that drives me nuts, because like there should be some kind of game plan. Like, how does your organization want to deploy AI for the benefit of the organization and the employees? And like, you know, AI literacy and all this stuff is important. You know, being able to cobble together solutions like what you witnessed with the folks that like use WhatsApp to post to WordPress, like that's all really cool. I want these organizations to, the leadership of these organizations to fully understand like how it's going to help their organization now and how to get people to at least leverage it from the productivity side. Go into ChatGPT and understand the differences between from just like vanilla prompting to what a GPT is, what a project is, what memory means across all of that stuff, like ChatGPT's memory. Do you even want to have that on? Is something that should be a question, you know, in an organization. I think it really, for me anyway, the first step is that literacy component to all of this stuff. How are you understanding it and applying it to the business? And do you understand the implications, right? I think so here's another example. I talked to a friend of my wife's friend. He works for this massive construction company in New York, and they build really big buildings for really big like financial companies. It's like the real deal. And I was asking him when I saw him a couple weeks ago, and I was like, so are you guys into AI? And he said, yeah, they just tell us to use it. And I was just like, what does that mean? Like, you are a multi-billion dollar company building these for other multi-billion dollar companies, and your directives are just play with it? And he's like, yeah, that's all they do. He's like, I just use it to like summarize slides and like write emails to clients. And I just like, how is this? Like, this is the plan. And I think that when you just start shipping things that you don't care or know, that's when a lot of the faults come in. Like, if you just have all these people who are just sending emails and summarizing stuff and just taking it for what it's given you, that's where, you know, we're in, you know, for trouble across the board. And we'll never see value in it if that's just the case.
To expand off of what you're saying right there, that's my internal, you know, conspiracy theorist, you know, paranoid person thinks, right?
Yeah.
Is like, we used to sit down back in the day and think about what we wanted to communicate and write a letter, fold it, put it in an envelope, put a stamp on it and send it. And then we got email and we were told that it was going to make things more efficient and better and make our lives easier. And now I delete 200 spam emails a day, right? It's like just becomes slop and mess. And then when I look at the way the average person is using AI, and keep in mind, like, I'm thinking averages, grand scale, right? When I look at the way the average person is using AI, it's not productive. It's not clean. It's not pretty. And the output's not good. It just makes us lazy. It's like the difference between, you know, knowing 25 phone numbers as a kid and being able to dial a phone real quick from your friend's house, right? And then now if you lost your cell phone, you'd be lost because you don't memorize any phone numbers anymore. Like, all the stuff kind of makes us lazy. And I don't see the average person really benefiting from AI. I see AI benefiting from $20 a month from everybody that's not optimizing their $20 a month.
Yeah. I mean, for the average person, once again, I am not this leading AI scientist. I'm just looking at it from technology that I've experienced in the past with a boom, with a hype cycle, and like how I'm using it and the results I'm getting from it. But really where I want to see AI win for the average person is that lack of education on stuff that's extremely impactful in their life. Contracts, you know, terms of service, medical records, understanding their local policy. Like, these are the things that AI should be solving for people. And I do this, man, all the time now. Like, when any app gives me a new terms of service that I agree to, I copy, I paste into ChatGPT, and I say, please find all the stuff in this agreement that impacts my privacy, my data, selling my data. And I try to understand these legal things because that's important to me. I'm not going to read through 9,000 pages of legalese. This is where I want to see AI really help. I want AI to really help the average person understand how their local government works so that they can actually make an impact on whatever it is that they need to do. And, you know, making videos and coming up erotica through a chat system is not something that I see as human value to the tune of trillions of dollars.
No.
You know, so I want that more, you know, that advantage of the stuff I just said.
Yeah. Jonathan, over to you.
Yeah, before we go to our break, I think that's a great point. I was listening to the Big Technology podcast a couple of days ago their YouTube channel, and they had an interview with the joint founder of Salesforce. Unfortunately, I can't remember the gentleman's name, but it was a fascinating discussion. Obviously, Salesforce, about a month, 2 months ago, said they're reducing their headcount by 5,000. But I've also noticed that Salesforce share price was under pressure. They were feeling the heat a bit. And I think that was one of the main reasons why this guy, very insightful, went on the big technology podcast, because I think it was a PR job to defend the share price. Yeah. I think what you just outlined about your discussion with your friend that works for the construction company, other companies, is that corporate America really hasn't found a real use case for this. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, that's where I really keep pushing myself to find the benefits. I was just on another podcast before this one, we were talking about it. I try to watch the extremes, both extremes. So you and I, or the three of us, have been around in the WordPress space long enough where you remember 15, 18 years ago when it was like how to make $1 million with blogging, right? And then it became like how to make millions of dollars with selling courses and how to make millions of dollars doing XYZ. And now you're seeing the same cycle, that same thing come back. This time it's with AI. So I watched the extreme of that, of like, what are these, you know, 20-year-olds doing on the weekend to make a zillion dollars with this app? And then I look at the enterprise companies and I go, what are they doing? They're doing nothing. This guy over here is making $100,000 in a weekend. Somewhere there's a mismatch.
Or he's saying he is.
Right. So I'm trying to like, here's the hype. And then here's like what's actually deploying. Is there anything in the middle that's where this is actually working? And again, I'm just looking at it from the from some of those workflow advantages, the automation, the ideating, stuff like that. But I don't see a complete solution of like how big business is deploying this stuff yet. And maybe that's just because we're witnessing all this stuff. We have a heightened awareness of technology these days, and we're all like trying to. All right, is this it? Is this the one? Is this, where are we in the gold rush?
Like the Salesforce, it's been reported. I don't know if this is true, but it's been reported. Yes, they fired a lot of their front facing customer support, but on the same breath, they've imported a ton of programmers and others that can help them expand their AI because they feel under threat. They've got to develop. That's what's been reported. How true that is, I don't know. I'm just saying that what's been reported.
Yeah. Well, these big businesses, they let people go at every big news cycle, right? Downward economy, get rid of everybody. Recession, get rid of everybody. AI, get rid of everybody. And it's just like, have they replaced them with the productive AI? That's a thing to figure out.
Been a great discussion so far. We're going to go for our middle break and our great sponsors that are really, we love their support. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
Updating plugins and themes shouldn't feel risky. That's why over 300,000 WordPress users trust WP Rollback. With just a click, you can safely roll back any plugin or theme. No manual file uploads and no downtime. And with WP Rollback Pro, you can download premium plugins and themes. Tools like Elementor, Gravity Forms, more. Track every rollback you do with detailed activity logs. Protect your workflow and take the stress out of updates. Learn more at wprollback.com.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Lifter LMS, the leading learning management system solution for WordPress. If you or your client are creating any kind of online course, training-based membership website, or any type of e-learning project, Lifter LMS is the most secure, stable, well-supported solution on the market. Go to lifterlms.com and save 20% at checkout with coupon code podcast20. That's podcast20. Enjoy the rest of your show.
We're coming back. Also, I want to point out we've got some great deals from the sponsors, plus a curated list of the best WordPress plugins and services that will help the power user, the freelancer, or the small agency owner. All the stuff that we recommend we either use ourselves at WP Tonic or I've used personally myself, so you can trust it. And we've got some great special offers. You can get all these goodies by going over to wp-tonic.com/deals. wp-tonic.com/deals. That's where you get all the goodies. What more could you ask for, my beloved tribe? Probably a lot more, but that's all you're going to get on that page. It's only a bit of the show they like, but so let us go forth. I'm going to diversify from the questions. I think, where do you see WordPress with AI? Do you think, because I was listening, I'm not going to name him out, a very popular YouTube influencer. He does a lot of WordPress type content, but he's not very engaged in podcasting. He's got over 500,000 subscribers to his YouTube channel. And he was saying, you're not going to have to buy all these plugins. You know, you're going to be able to replace all the phone plugin, this plugin. And I agreed with some of what he was saying, because some of these plugins, I think, are ridiculously priced. But he was saying, I don't think any plugin should cost more than $50 a year or something like that. Yeah. I'm not going to name him because I don't want to get a letter. Where do you stand? Do you think the pro plugin is going to be really hammered in the next 18 months?
Yeah, I watched the same video, saw the same hype. It's going to be interesting at his next WordCamp if he goes to them. I like that reaction. But I think, again, a year ago, I was saying things like, I could never, like, how are you ever going to forecast 5 years, like seeing all of this stuff happening in this rapid pace? Now I'm saying, yeah, we got time. And 18 months, 5 years, I think plugins are still safe, the commercial plugins, and the reliance on the support and development of those plugins, I think we're still on safe ground, at least in that span. I recently launched courses at the WP Minute, and I built a calculator to put in my Lifter LMS lesson. I built it using Telix, and which is Automattic's AI tool for building Gutenberg blocks. Really cool. Pretty seamless 20, 30 minutes little vibe code session to build this little calculator that helps people figure out like what they need for a hosting provider, but relatively contained, right? It's really just calculating some math and spitting out some text. Could I ever replicate Gravity Forms to the level that Gravity Forms has where my day job? I could build a simple contact form, sure. But as soon as I start going into like integrations, multi-users, like APIs, no way. You'd have to be an engineering team to like develop all this stuff. It'd take you just as much time. So I think the reliance on, you know, it's easy to say like,
okay, yeah, can I quickly, I totally agree with you that, but the only area is, and I'm going to hopefully not be too controversial here. I'm really attempting not to. Changing my ways, Matt. I think there's and I understand where they come from, there's a whole industry in WordPress of offshore developers that bid on very low type of work. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to name the platforms either, but they bid really low.
You're out of legal tokens this year. in 2026.
People are very... I'm looking for the right word. They're sending out the letters left, right, and centre. So you've got to be very careful lately, right? But I'm drawing a thing. So they're looking to save money left, right, and centre because they're bidded really low. And I think what this influencer, I think that influences that crowd. Do you think I'm right there?
Yeah, I would say so. Like, I would say that there's one of the things that WordPress suffers from, because it's the biggest target and the broadest use case of website building, which leads to so many things across the globe, that there's just this massive amount of people who just want the cheapest. And it's just like, I don't see the value in anything but just like, give me this thing. I'm not going to spend a lot of money for it, and I'm just going to move on with my life. But we've been WordPress has been battling that ever since I started podcasting. It was a whole reason, one of the reasons why I started my podcast was to go up against like the person down the street that sold a $500 website and then left. And that client came to us and was like, fix this for us. And we said, it's going to be $5,000. And they were like, oh my God, that last guy only charged me $500. And I was like, yeah, where is he now? So like we've been battling that for years, and unfortunately AI is going to accelerate that. But I also think that AI is going to accelerate the visibility of a well-coded plugin. Like if you actually sat down and let's say you had my capabilities, which is just a power user, and I tried to build Gravity Forms through vibe coding, or even a form that like connected to MailChimp, just did like some simple stuff that Gravity Forms does, I would be like 30, 40 hours of even like trying to get that to work as a plugin with all these other services. Why don't I just go spend $50 at Gravity Forms and buy the plugin? So like, I think what happens with these tools, at least in their current iteration, is people will play with them and they'll go, you know what? I should have just used WordPress. Or I should have just bought that plugin. Like I've now spent all of this time. I could have just bought that plugin that I once said was too much money. And I'm going to get support and updates, and somebody else is thinking about the roadmap and not me. So I think there's always that short-term thing where people look at and they go, yeah, this is really cool. I can replace all this stuff. But then that long-term is, oh my God, now I'm responsible for this thing. Now what do I do?
Yeah, I was looking at a platform. I think it was Lovely. Lovable, that's right, thank you. And they had a FEMA converter, and then it would build off the FEMA, and then it could export a WordPress theme into WordPress and set. Yeah. That looked interesting. Yeah. That looked interesting. That could cut that. Don't know how well it worked. Oh, it was Elementor. It converted it into Elementor. So there's some interesting stuff, but there's also a lot of hype, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a ton of hype. And I said this before, but I think we're going to start to learn the true cost of AI. My Replit example, it used to be $20. Now, like my base, as soon as I start prompting it, it warns me and says, you've already used your base $20 a month tokens. And it's starting to do things like, it's starting to push I guess in its defense, it's starting to push the right way of development. Like now, instead of just burning all those tokens when I ask it to make a mini app, it says, well, would you like to do it this way? If you do it this way, it takes 20 minutes for it to complete. If you do it this way, it's 40 minutes to complete. Or we can just wireframe it and you can look at it before we start to burn all of those tokens. So I'm starting to realize like they are looking at that cost factor now going, we can't let people just go at this thing anymore. We need to slow them down, do it the right way, or else we go out of business. And then it starts spawning off agents to do optimizations for security, performance. It's all the right way. But I think what we're going to realize is in a year or 2 years, Replit will be $500 a month, which on paper you go, well, it's still better than paying an engineer. But it wasn't $20, not $20 anymore. Now it's $500. And then it's going to go into the thousands to get that better engineer. And that's when I think the world is going to be like, oh, damn, do we use this, or do we just pay a human to get it right for us?
Yeah, over to you, Kurt.
Well, I'm listening to you guys have the conversation. And, you know, I'm the one out of the three of us that has the burden of running an agency. And I'll tell
burden
you guys.
Burden is a good word.
I'm running an agency, kind of. It's a kind of hybrid I'm running, isn't it?
Clients bring us, you know, a project. Oh, we have a pre-existing website, yellow flag, right? Well, where is it hosted? Another yellow flag. And then, well, we've got some custom development on it. Another yellow flag, right? So where did you vibe code this thing at? And my agency, I'm just going to tell you guys, I just, you know, it's that walled garden thing Jonathan talks about. It's like, well, sorry, Mr. Customer, you've backed yourself into a corner. You can either pay us to like rebuild this thing with known viable tools that have support, or, you know, you can just find someone else to work on this mess, because I just don't even want to touch it. And there's a lot of people that I talk to that are kind of in that same space. And so there's a part of me that's like, yeah, I see the messaging, right? Oh, don't pay for expensive plugins. You can vibe code your own, use these cool tools. But then you back yourself into a corner where you're not going to be able to get professional support or help down the road. And if you have any hopes of growing and scaling your business, hopefully it's that you don't want to be a webmaster the rest of your life. You want to focus on the business you were trying to run. So I really worry that people are going to work themselves into a corner and then be trapped in their own mess.
Yeah. I was on that previous podcast that I was just recording. The gentleman said to me that he heard from Gary Vaynerchuk. So this is just me playing the game of telephone, but this definitely sounds like something Gary Vaynerchuk would say. Is Gary said that it's already starting, that in the next year or so, you'll have people who are starting come walk with me companies, because everyone's so like remote and AI that you'll want to pay somebody to go for a walk and talk and engage with another human. And like, that's where it's going to be for that like future agency owner, to just be the human on the other side. Even if AI is doing everything for us, I think we're always going to want that human reliance and insurance, and to be able to talk to somebody like, am I doing this right? Are we going down the right path? Can you help me strategize? So I get it. Like, I think we might be backing ourselves into a corner with the AI tools, but as you said, Kurt, like the person who's running the agency, like, you want to be helping that customer with their business, even if they're using AI, and yeah, it might just take a different shape.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. Jonathan, are we going to the video review that we were talking about with Andre Carpathy?
No, I think we jumped to, I think we've covered that in a way. Would you agree with that, Kurt? I think in the conversation.
Well, we didn't get to say that AI was a spirit person yet.
Well, we kind of, well, do you want to quickly ask Matt a quick question on that?
No, I mean, it's just interesting. So for listeners and viewers, there was a video that had come out with OpenAI's former director and Tesla's Andre Carpathy, and he had some remarks about artificial intelligence. And so we watched the video. We were going to discuss it some. What I found the most interesting, and about all of these AI videos, so I wanted to kind of, like, my comment fell into, like, almost all of these, like, big executives talking about AI, I noticed they're not talking about, hey, let's see what it does right now. Let me show you this cool thing I can do right now with it. Let me do this kink. Let me show you in real time what this awesome thing does. Instead, it seems like they're all casting this vision of some, you know, just weird abstract future of, this is the way we think it's going to develop. This is the way we think it's going to expand. This is the way we think it's going to scale. And, you know, in this guy's case, he's saying it's not even like, we're not even having a hardware discussion. We're just,
yeah, I just want to say one, can I just say one quick thing?
Yeah,
here?
It's your show. Say what I want.
No, it's our show. It's our show. I pay for the editing of that, but it's our show. I don't want this really to come across as negative to AI, because it's made an enormous difference to me, Matt, because my personal circumstances, I'm not going to go into detail, but I think the tools and for the specific things I'm using it for, it's made a big difference to me, Matt. And I use a lot of AI, and it's made a big difference to my own personal production and what I can do. And it's made me more efficient. So I think there's a lot of people that could say that. So it's finding this middle ground, isn't it, Matt? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree. I'm also trying not to come off as like super negative to it, because I do have those efficiency gains, and there's definitely some value there. And it's, yes, it's saving time. But yeah, when I again look at the global leaders or any leader of these bigger organizations, and I don't see the now stuff that they're painting, it's always the future stuff. I'm just like, where were you taking us? You know.
Well, I think just because I want to get onto story four, and sure. We'll probably have to call it a day. Hopefully you've got enough time, because I'd love to have a quick chat with you after the show, but you have to clear off, I understand. But I think a lot of this is about the core of what we're dealing with, and I'm no expert. I probably spent in my background listening to podcasts, listening to YouTube, as I'm trying to make my living, not part of this inner circle, but trying to understand it, is that it's fantastic technology. It truly is pattern recognition technology on steroids, right? Really on steroids, amazing technology. It is not consciousness. It knows nothing. It's a glorified parrot, but that's not diminishing it, because it's amazing pattern recognition technology, like I say, on steroids, that will make a difference. But I think it's these people in the industry that have got this religious tone about them that are trying to sell it as human consciousness, that it knows. It knows nothing. How would you respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some edge cases about, like, again, this partnership level of looking at ChatGPT and a lot of the stuff that they've, you know, talked about with not using it as a life partner, and like all of this stuff. And I get the attractiveness to that, right? As somebody who might not have social connections or abilities to be social and all this stuff. And this is literally at your fingertips, and that feeling of it being real is right on the edge, man, of should you trust this? Is this legal? You know, it brings in a lot of those like deep connections. And, you know, I don't want to say people are wrong for engaging with it that way if that's what they're doing. But it's up to like OpenAI and all these other systems to put those safeguards in place, and also put those whatever warnings or be more transparent about these results that people are getting, so that they avoid any kind of like, oh, this is a thing that I've fallen in love with, or this is a thing that I believe is my God, or this is a thing that's like giving me great business advice. Like, there has to be some protection there, other than the one sentence that appears on every chat dialogue, which is this might give you wrong information, please check your work. Like, imagine if we all had that out in our business, like, this website might not perform with you. Please double check our work before you press go live on the website we just built you. I don't know. It just teeters along this real weird edge of humanity that we're in right now.
It's really strange times, isn't it? Let's go on to WooCommerce. You know, you had a great interview recently with the general manager, Castrol, Ian Minster. I've actually asked him on my own show in December, based on your conversation. I don't know if he's going to, I think he's listening to this interview to make his mind up. He's probably going to say no now. But hopefully you'll agree to come on. Where do you see where WooCommerce is? Because I listened to the interview and Ian seemed to make a lot of sense to me. But I just think that Automattic and WooCommerce are just missed an enormous opportunity to build a self-hosted solution that could really compete with Shopify, but still have, when people want to a more customized solution, they've also got the whole self-hosted and the community around that to offer it. And it just seems to me a totally missed opportunity, but it could be retrieved, but I'm not even sure. But I don't know all the inside story. It's easy me as an outsider to put this, but I'm not in the trenches. So what do I really know? They seem to be trying to do better marketing against Shopify, but it just seems to me that Automattic should have had and can still have a laser focus on building a hosted solution that really should compete with Shopify head to head. And does AI have some linkage to this? Over to you, Matt.
So I'll try to summarize that because I have a lot of thoughts on this, but I would say that obviously over the course of the last year, things have not been great for Automattic. And and through that, the perception of WordPress, and through that, the perception of the stability of WordPress. And you would also, I mean, I'll make the argument so that you don't get the legal letter, but I would say that whatever happened, you know, just over a year ago, it was in the works for at least a year prior, if not 2 years prior to that. And we can easily say that Automattic has been distracted by doing too much. Like we have, you know, whatever, 45% of the internet. Why are we doing things like Tumblr and all these other products? All these other products, of which some of the products I really love. Pocket Cast, Simple Note, you know, some of the things in Jetpack I really like. But why aren't we just doubling down on WordPress and WooCommerce? Like that should be the business. And I put a prediction post out in January this year that of all these things I would do at Automattic, and one of them is like cutting the fat and like doing all this stuff and doubling down on the product. I think they're finally doing that with WooCommerce through the hire of, I think it's a new general manager or a new president of WooCommerce, or at least marketing person. So I'm seeing much more marketing coming out, which is good. I'm seeing a lot more developer advocates like Brian Cords joining the team. So I think just in when you're part of a 2,000 person organization, in which many just like a lot of the stuff maybe just default to Matt, they're trying to pivot that battleship amongst all that stuff that's been happening. So let's just be honest. They lost 2 years, which is like 5 years, right, in tech, and especially up against somebody like Shopify. The advantage is open source and free and lots of web hosting companies.
I still think they could turn it. I still think the opportunity to turn it around is still not being missed.
Here's what I think. As I talk to people over the last couple of months, and like asking people, are you like, how's business, number one? How's your marketing? Are you going to these events? How do you feel now that we might be at this tail end of this lawsuit, maybe, I don't know. The biggest feeling that I get are people are just, they're still for WordPress. They're just heads down working. I got to get the job done to make the business happen. Whereas like the last 10 years has been like everyone just like, we love each other. It's the community. My friend over there, I'll share my ideas with you. Here's my plugin. You want mine? I'll take your plugin. Come on my show. Now I think people are like, oh, damn. Whatever happened with this lawsuit got everybody heads down and back to work. You know what? I got to be more serious about this work. And I got to be more serious about being profitable in this WordPress space. And I think that WooCommerce is also having that same moment. And I would say to the service folks that are out there that I think that WooCommerce is the next best opportunity for people to double down and build their business on. Because we're starting to see a lot more competitors come up, which is an indication of people want e-commerce on WordPress. They're going to try to attack WooCommerce as the big place to go, but I think that's only going to motivate and actually make Woo and WordPress better in the long run.
I heard a whisper that they're planning to spend even more money on Jetpack.
I would imagine so.
And I don't understand it. I've got nothing against the team, nothing, but they need to be laser focused on WooCommerce, in my opinion. I think you agree, don't you?
I do. Yeah. I mean, I can also make the case for Jetpack, you know, definitely on WooCommerce. And yeah, I mean, I think because what happens, like all the stuff we're saying about AI, and all these business like Replit prices going up. I mean, we're seeing it with Shopify already. Like once you get into Shopify, the prices go up. Like it's and whatever, like a lot of people are like, that's fine. I'm running an e-commerce business. That's just the cost of doing business. And I think that's the advantage that WordPress will have and WooCommerce will have is, you know, the cost of switching and managing it all will be a lot better.
There's a stage though where a SaaS kind of environment makes sense. But if you're one of the lucky ones that grows, there's a time where you want a more customized and dropping a system completely and going to a new system. It's such a decision to make. But if you've got a SaaS kind of platform and then you can then move it much easier to a more customizable. That's such a, anybody that's got any common sense, that's a great sales pitch, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And just real quick on the AI thing in WooCommerce, and I think Matt said this at the recent WordCamp US, his fireside chatter keynote, whatever you call it. And he brought up a good point, which I hadn't been thinking of, is as AI starts to get baked more into the browser, because look, they're all fighting for it. They're all fighting for the attention of the user. ChatGPT wants you to log into ChatGPT. Eventually, they'll want you to use their browser. Google's going to want you in their thing. And meanwhile, like if you're building websites, Elementor is going to want you in their like site builder, yeah, as an example.
I'm going to have to, because we're getting close to the hour, and I've taken up too much time in this podcast. And my, okay. My co-host has been extremely patient and allowed me, but I know he's going to have to go soon.
Yep.
So let's wrap up. So Kirk, would you like to take the opportunity to tell people how people can find more about you? And I do apologize for
No, it's all good.
Right.
It's all good. Talking to Matt's always a blast, and I always learn something. So you can reach me at mananonomas.com. Mananonomas is also my social tag for X and Facebook. And I'm on LinkedIn, Kirk Von Anden on LinkedIn.
Yeah. And Matt, what's the best way for people to find out more about you and what you're up to, Matt?
The WPMinute.com. Check out Kurt's podcast on the WPMinute.com, Agency Action. You can find that right in the podcast link, and my day job at gravityforms.com.
Have you got time for additional 5-10 minutes and then 3 or 4 minutes afterwards, or do we need to end it, Matt?
Yeah, no, I'm good.
Right, we're going to do some bonus content, folks, which you'll be able to watch on the WP Tonic YouTube channel, but we're going to close out the podcast part of the show. But one thing I've got to ask, if you really enjoyed this interview, and I thought it was a blast, mate, and you're listening on Spotify, on iTunes, on your phone, can you leave us a review? Both me and Kurt would be very appreciative, because it's the best way to promote the show on those platforms. So if you could do that, we would be really, really happy. We will be back next week with another great interview. We'll see you soon, folks. Bye. So on to bonus content. I don't know, but do you think I'm just too critical? Because it's easy for me to point the obvious, but I have no idea what's really going on with how difficult it is to make a really good SaaS kind of environment with WooCommerce. I have no idea what I'm really talking about, or, you know, in some ways, but it just seems the obvious to me. But these are really bright people, so maybe I'm wrong, because I'm not the brightest, but I'm not the bluntest tool in the toolbox.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it comes down to a lot of like internal infrastructure stuff, plus, you know, a decade plus of selling add-ons and marketplace, and an initial shock to maybe revenue, and how do you do rev share? And in case of WooCommerce, it's like, how do you incorporate the add-ons from third-party makers, you know, like Ian from Kestrel? Like, how do you do all that stuff? Like, it's easy for us to sit, like, Monday morning quarterback it, but I'm sure that's the challenges they're going through. You know, and now, of course, like in the case of AI, it's just, you know, and it's time. It's like, okay, even if you have that path of like how you're going to execute on the tech stack side, now you got to do it, which just takes time to test and to deploy and do all the stuff. So maybe it's already in the works. It's the obvious thing. It's been the obvious thing for many years, but I think there was just too much distraction. And I really think that now they're going to double down on it and make it work.
Let's go back to AI and a bit. What's your opinion of these AI builders? I was listening to Kevin Gowery. He's very, he was doing a live YouTube stream, and he was talking about agencies. And I don't agree with everything Kevin says, but I did agree with 99% what he was saying in this live stream about how you sell and that. He's very passionate. It's very opinionized. But I had to say, I agreed with 95% of what you're saying. So what's your own feelings about, obviously, when it comes to agency, AI builders don't really matter, do they? But to some degree, and apart from will they take the way you're feeding your family, but
yeah.
I do think having a website up and running quickly is one thing. Having a website that actually gets clients, actually makes a difference to your business, is a totally different ball game. Yeah. Totally different. What do you reckon?
I haven't gone too deep into the WordPress AI site builders, aside from like playing with them, WordPress.com, Elementors, and just getting a feel for them. I did use Telex, like I was saying earlier, to build a Gutenberg block. And what I noticed is like, okay, the output was good. Like it achieved what I wanted to do. It just didn't do it in the traditional WordPress way. In other words, yes, it made a Gutenberg block that I could download as a plugin. So yes, the baseline was acceptable. But if you click to modify a block, it's using all kinds of, it's not using individual blocks to build it. In other words, it's not taking all of what Gutenberg gives you. It's just wrapping all of this custom code in a block and saying, here you go. I think as hopefully as that evolves, you'll start to see it break out the components of whatever you're building in a block to use the other default blocks, much like you might build something with GeneratePress or Cadence or even Elementor or ACF. Like you've got all these like individual blocks in that one big component. And if AI continues to get better as a productivity tool and as a coding tool, I'll tell you what the most interesting thing is, and this is where I was going with the Mullenweg comment. If browsers start to have native AI in it with automation in the browser, like Perplexity kind of does, if WordPress code is so good and Gutenberg code is so good eventually and well documented, that you can just prompt your browser to make the Gutenberg block for you, right? Like, do you even need Telex at that point? Do you even need Elementor at that point or Kevin's product? If the browser can just write the great WordPress open source code and Gutenberg open source code in the browser and put it right onto your editor. I think we're at a battle soon of abstracting where that happens. Is it going to be inside of somebody's Elementor Etch plugin, or is it going to be at the browser level where WordPress?
Yeah, but he was arguing, and I was really totally against it, really, but I'm now reconsidering. I do see where he's coming from. He says a lot of the time, he doesn't even allow the client have access to the website. They have to sign a contract. And he gave the example, you got a landing page and you optimize the title, the main message, and it's in part of the deal is you're getting results and you're monitoring it through Google Analytics or whatever analytical package you're using. And it's part, you know, your response, and then the client or whoever has access to the website and they change the title and the conversion drops. And right. He says anything that goes wrong with that website, they're not going to blame themselves. Right. You're the one that gets the blame because they're giving you some money, right? And that's what my experience is, and I'm sure it's yours. He's right, isn't he?
He is right.
Anything goes wrong, they never take any responsibility for their actions. It's always your fault.
Yeah. And, you know, I've never fully agreed on his stance on that stuff. I mean, look, at the end of the day, it's when you turn to somebody and you say, well, that's why in my contract, hypothetically speaking, it's just like, if you break something, and you need an emergency fix is $500 an hour. Because if you call me on a Sunday and I need to fix this for you, that's how much it's going to cost. So you can have the keys to your website. Just know that it comes with these things. I'm not going to do it for free. So I never agreed on like fully owning that with.
Yeah, that's my own position. That's my own. Thanks for pointing that out. So the other thing before we wrap it up is, I want to go back to the YouTube influencers, and I've tried to build up my own YouTube channel, and I've been reasonably successful, and I'm going to be really concentrating on that. But I love podcasting, you know, I love radio, and I got into podcasting because I do love it. but I am probably going to concentrate more on YouTube. I think you can do both, though. I don't want to give up on podcasting. It's been good to me. But these influencers, this other one, and there's like two to three I've been watching, they're actual loathing of Gutenberg. Their visceral loathing of Gutenberg. There's about three or four major influencers that I watch their videos, and they all loathe Gutenberg with real venom. What do you think that's about, Matt?
I think that's just about them catering to, you know, that negative, you know, hype that inspires many people to engage with, right? Whether it's like, I can't stand my city council and this person on the city council, all the way to I can't stand Gutenberg blocks. It just gets people fired up, you know, and engaged in chat. And sure, you might not like it. You might not use it for your business. My real problem is influencers that don't understand why Gutenberg exists and why it needs to win for what it does for the longevity of WordPress. When you start to not see that, you can not use Gutenberg all you want and bring in your own page builder. That's fine. But if you're, you know, leading these folks into using WordPress, you should at least understand why it exists and, you know, what it means to the project. It's unfortunate. It's just like humans. It's just unfortunate. They're never going to understand like why, they'll never make the case for it at the end of the day. And it's easy for them to beat it up and then show something else as an alternative. Plus, YouTube is YouTube, right? It gets engagements. It gets clicks. It gets people chatting. And that's the downside of social media.
Well, one of the two of these, you know, because I've been a little bit critical of Gutenberg, but
sure.
But I use Cadence and I also like Generate. I've used Generate Press, yep. And they're the two I recommend if you're going to use Gutenberg, because I think there's others, but the reason I don't recommend them is I don't dislike them, but
yep.
I only recommend stuff that I've got some knowledge, personal knowledge of, and I've used Generate Press and I've used more Cadence. And I know a lot of people, like a few people that use Generate Press, and it and I trust their opinion. And I also like Cadence. I like Ben as well. So I think they're both really good products, but some other people, I think they're doing it for the YouTube channel, but others, they really do dislike Gutenberg, don't they?
Yeah. 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 It's just one of those things that is a standout decision that people can, and it makes sense. Like if you're not analyzing the WordPress space or understanding what's happening in the community, that's the decision. When you got into WordPress, you know, this is me hypothetically, that person came into WordPress, they started using WordPress, and then all of a sudden, you know, they don't know how the community works, how open source works. They hear that that's the next greatest thing. They don't care about, like, they just want to use WordPress as a free tool. They're not caring about its longevity and its importance in open source. So it's easy for them to be like, I can't believe this is the thing they're trying to force down our throats here. And it's an easy thing for them to attack. And, you know, unfortunately, it's not going away. and they will make it better. So it's going to continue to evolve. It's just at a slow pace.
All right. I think we're in the added content. Thank you so much, Matt, for coming on the show. It's been a blast. I think we've covered a ton of stuff. And I think it's been an interesting discussion. We're going to end it now. And hopefully Matt will return in the new year. And we have another great discussion. We'll see you soon, folks. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening. We really do appreciate it. Why not visit the Mastermind Facebook group? And also, to keep up with the latest news, click wp-tonic.com/newsletter. We'll see you next time.